the CougarFan.com Rising Shout Podcast, Season 9, Episode 387. Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. This is a weekly conversation about BYU sports between me, Adam Mangum, and my brother Matt. In this week's show, we talk about our expectations for the men's basketball team. We also talk about the one thing that could turn around the BYU football program, and we preview the USF game using Mad Libs. Rise and shout, Cougars. It's game time.
Got my password.
Well, I wouldn't. We're recording, so I wouldn't say your password.
I'm trying like every password I know. I can't get into this. This is silly.
I don't know what to tell you.
Well, don't tell me what you think the password is, and everybody's going to, all four of our listeners will know the password.
That's right. I believe it's password. Capital P, capital W.
Already tried it.
All right, so Matt, today's opener, because apparently some people don't want us to talk about baseball.
I don't know what's wrong with those people. They're un-American.
We'll get to that in a second. You just called some of our listeners un-American.
They should think about what they've done.
Yeah, they probably should. So, Matt, we have not talked about college football in general, so we're going to open with that a little bit today. So,
all right.
If you look at the top 20, let's call it top 25 teams, and we're here at week 6, right? Week 6. There are, let's see, 5, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 of those teams are undefeated. Of the top 25.
Yep.
And then you've got Minnesota, who's not in the top 25 of the Massey ratings, that, you know, combined rating. They're at 34, and they're also undefeated. Appalachian State, who's, of course, not in the SBS, is also... Are they in? They are in FBS now, aren't they?
They are now.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
are now.
They're 4-0.
They won their way in. It's like relegation.
Yeah, something like that. So Matt,
yeah, something like that.
Chaos right now reigns in college football, right? And then you look at that, and the Pac-12, which may be maybe the third best conference in the land, depending on who you talk to or listen to, they don't have any of those teams because they keep beating each other.
And they're not.
I don't think they're likely to have a team in the playoff. So let's talk about it.
They've done it again.
They've done it again because the Big 12, who's not nearly as good of a conference, is going to actually. The Big 12's been very good this year, so I shouldn't say that. But I think they've been pretty good this year. You look at their top. You look at the top 25 here. I mean, you've got Oklahoma, you got Baylor, you got Texas. None of these teams are bad. These are all good teams, right?
Yeah,
Oklahoma,
I guess that's true.
State, they've got some good teams. Yeah, Big 12's pretty good this year. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is the Pac-12's beating each other up. So, Matt, here you go. Your top four. Who's making the playoff?
Oh, see, I clicked away.
Why'd you click away?
Stall!
You want me to
stall,
go first?
Stall.
I'll go first. Here's the
thing. All right, you go first.
I think any list has to start with Alabama and Clemson. And then it comes down to who you think the other two teams are. I think it would be idiotic at this point, from what we know today in this season, as well as those two teams have played. I know Clemson had a scare. But as well as those two teams have played, to think they're not going to be back in the college football playoff. So let's just, can we agree to that?
So,
put those two teams.
Are we saying who we think is going to make it, or who we think should be in there?
That's, who we think is questions. Going to make the playoff. Our prediction as to who will make the playoff. Not
All
who's
right.
most deserving, or, you know, Clemson's overrated, whatever. I think it, at this
Clemson
point,
Clemson is overrated.
Alabama has, like, what is it? Like, I think I saw on ESPN over the weekend, they have like a 86% chance of going undefeated, right? Something stupid. Stupid high at this point of the season. And Clemson's got much lower, but still a very good chance of going undefeated. So let's just put those two. Is that okay, or are you going to argue that? You don't think either of one of those teams doesn't make the playoff?
No, I think they're both going to make it, but okay. I believe Clemson is overrated.
Well, and the thing is, they're not going to get a chance. I mean, they don't play a whole lot. The ACC is terrible.
No, they don't. They don't have anybody really left on their schedule, so we're not going to find that out until we get to the playoff.
There isn't another ACC team. No, Wake Forest is the only other ACC team in the top 40. The Mountain West has as many teams in the top 40 as the ACC does. So, anyway. All right. So put those two teams up there. Who are your other two teams? Actually, let me do this. I'll give you the candidates from each of the other conferences, okay? And then we'll go back to the SEC. Who do you like between Ohio State and Wisconsin?
I don't think you got the right two teams.
Out of the Big Ten? Penn State.
I'm taking Penn State out of the Big Ten.
It's Ohio State. Are you joking me? Penn State's not terrible.
I am serious. I am serial.
All right, you're taking Penn State to win the Big 12. Big 10. Okay, not the Big 12.
Yeah, they might win the Big 12 too. I don't know. They might win both.
They're that good. Okay, so let's look at the Big 12. You've got Baylor and Oklahoma. It's Oklahoma, right?
It's Oklahoma.
All right. So, which, by the way, if Oklahoma beat Alabama in the college football playoff, isn't that amazing? Wouldn't that be amazing? Right?
It'd be one of the greatest stories of all time.
Beats Tua. Right? It would be amazing. All right. Then let's see. What conference have I forgotten? The Pac-12. Any chance Oregon? They're the one team, I think, with a shot here. Washington, if you'd asked me last week, I thought Washington was the one with the best shot. But I think they're out. I don't think anybody. Okay, so what about the SEC? Are they going to have a second team? Do you like LSU? Do you like Florida? Do you like Georgia? Do you like any of those teams to make a run?
I think LSU may make a run. I don't know that Georgia's got it in them to go the distance here.
Well, I think their schedule's too hard. I think they just... Yeah. Alabama, Clemson, who's your other teams? Penn State is one of your teams?
Penn State and LSU.
Penn State and LSU. I'm going to go with Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and... Oklahoma. Those are my four.
You said Clemson, Ohio State and Oklahoma?
Yeah, Ohio State and Oklahoma is my other two. Ohio State looks good, man. I hate to say that out loud. And they trademarked the word "the," so I mean, I can't even use that anymore. To take that word out of all of my sentences, it's frustrating, but it just is what it is.
Yeah, it'll be one of the.
Yeah, see,
one of. Say. Oh man.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna be hard to.
I don't know what
anymore.
I'm gonna do.
I don't know. Anyway, all right, college football. It's crazy. Lots of stuff. Let's head into the tweet bag.
My picks is crazy. I don't even know that I like my picks. No, tweet bag.
Your picks are terrible. Your pick is terrible.
Oklahoma's totally going to get in there.
So last week we talked about the program quite a bit and Kalani Sitake and all that other stuff. Let's talk a little bit about that. All right. So first question is from Travis Larson. This is on Twitter, that's what that's called. @BYU_RightShot is how you tweet at us. This is from @Larson_Travis. He says, in light of another season that has started to look a whole lot like the last several, what one thing do you think BYU can do that would most improve its long-term football success? Dave Broderick on Facebook, and that you can join the conversation there at facebook.com/RightShot. First off, last week's podcast was a real gut punch. Playoff baseball right off the top, and then he has a puking emoji. Puking. You're supposed to put that at the end, hedged by tons of disclaimers. Absolutely not. Not when it's the playoffs. That's our preseason, like, prediction extravaganza. Not the playoffs. And second, he says, what does BYU need to do to rebuild their program? Other schools hire great coaches and build awesome facilities. Do you see any rebuilding happening at BYU? So, Matt, before we answer Travis's question about what one thing do you need to do, let me pose something to you. Dave uses the word rebuild. Is that the right word to discuss what needs to happen to BYU football going forward? Yes or no?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Rebuild.
It is the right word.
I don't think it's the right word. I think that's... I don't think it's that broken, and rebuild is what happens when you're 1-10, right? You got to like tear it down to the floor and start over again. We're not 1-10, right? Well, not yet. We can't be because we don't have, you know, we already won 2 games. But you think a rebuild is required, huh?
I think we've lost our identity. I think we've lost our identity on both sides of the football. I think as a program right now, I think we're struggling to figure out where we fit into the landscape of life as an independent and what that means. I think if you go back in time a little bit and you think about what Notre Dame has done on this journey, they went through a stretch of time where they were losing a lot of games and not as visible or impactful on the national scene. And they found some ways to turn things around for them. I don't think the same formula would work for us for a variety of reasons, but I think we're struggling to figure out where we fit in. And so maybe rebuild isn't the right term. Maybe it's reinvent maybe it's a slightly different term, but I think the point is still the same. It used to be clear where we sat in college football, and right now it's not. And I'm not even sure what are we known for? What are we?
Does that matter? I mean, I'm not trying to be facetious, but what is, let's look at those top teams again, right? What is Alabama known for?
Winning.
Okay, but that doesn't address what you just said.
Well, I think it's a piece of it. I think being a successful programmer is a piece of it.
Yeah, sure. But what is Alabama known for? Great offense or great defense?
Well, great defense.
That's not.
I would argue that they're known for great defense.
That's not this year's team, or I would argue last year's team.
Okay.
And BYU historically has had teams that were a mixture of both offense and defense. Right.
I mean, yeah, but really, right? But really, like, what's BYU traditionally really known for?
Offense. But I would argue that that's absolutely overstated. I mean, that '96 team that you love so much, were they an offensive team or a defensive team?
They were a pretty well balanced team.
Yeah, yeah. I think I totally understand what you're saying, and I believe we've lost our identity. I think the defense actually has an identity. I think people don't like it. And that's a separate issue. The offense, we discussed this a bunch last week. I have no idea what they're trying to do, what they're trying to establish. And it feels a lot like 2 years ago with Detmer in his second year.
It's like we're just wandering the desert.
Well, are we a spread team? Are we a running team? I think we're definitely not a running team, which a lot of us thought going into the season was going to be what they were going to do, right? Be more heavy run than they have been and use this big offensive line to push people around, right? Especially somebody like a Toledo, for example, right? Run the ball 45, 50 times and just wear the heck out of them with your size. Didn't do that. So I agree with you there.
But I'd even say, like, when I talk about identity, I'm also talking about being competitive in the circles where we should be competitive, right? And specifically, I'm going to list 3 or 4 teams there. I want to be competitive against Utah. I want to be competitive against Utah State. I want to be competitive against Boise State.
Well, those are the teams we're playing every year, right?
Right.
They're kind of our conference at this point.
And they're the good teams that we play every year, right? Like, I could care less about UMass unless they beat us, right? Utah State, Boise State, I feel like that's table stakes, and we've got to be competitive there. And frankly, the last few years, we just have not been.
Well, you got to split those games.
Where do we
fit?
Who are we?
You got to split those games, right? That's what success looks like, at minimum, is splitting those games with those three teams. And Satake's, what, 1-9, 1-10, or whatever that number is against those three teams? You know, and to Dave's point, you look at us historically now, right? We haven't won double-digit games since 2011. Now, to be fair, there was a stretch like this before from 97 until Mendenhall came aboard.
Those were dark years. Those were the years of the Bibs. That was the Croton time. Like,
yeah. You had one really good year in 2001. You know, and independent, so we, you and I have talked about this. I don't think the correlation is independence. I think this mediocrity started before independence, right? If you look at our last 3 years in the Mountain West, we didn't win it. You know, we had some double-digit season wins there, but we didn't win the Mountain West Conference the last couple of years. So,
and that team a couple of years ago that won four games would have also been terrible in the Mountain West Conference.
Oh yeah, I mean they lost to a bunch of Mountain West teams, right? So I mean, there's no argument there, for me at least. So what is that one thing? To go back to Travis's question, if you could pick one thing that turns the program around, what is that one thing? You can only do one major change to the program. And Dave, of course, brings up great coaches, awesome facilities as potentials. What's your one thing?
Oh, jeez.
There's only one answer, by the way.
I want to say win games, but I don't think that's really the answer we're looking for here.
Great coach. You have to have a great coach. That's... Why is Alabama great? What's their identity? Their identity is Nick Saban. What's Clemson's identity?
It's Dabo Sweeney. Even Dabo LSU Sweeney. Right now. Like, what have they done there?
Yeah.
You know, they got that coach from Waterboy. And I'm just kidding. Ed Orgeron's a good guy, by all accounts. But, like, you know, they got a coach.
Great coaching. And I know people hate to hear this because they want to talk about the talent gap and whatever else. Boise State gets about the same kind of recruiting classes in talent as we do. That's just a fact, right? It's been up and down, and they've had better years, and we've had better years over the last
15 years. And we're stealing recruits from each other.
Yeah,
we're recruiting
I get all that.
The same kid.
I get all that. But in the end, the aggregate answer is they play above their talent level. It's not about talent gap. It's about coaching gap. And I know people say, no, Kalani's a great guy, and you know, he doesn't have all his recruits yet and all that stuff. And there's some truth to that. I mean, the players have to play. But do you ever sit there and say with Boise State, oh, they got a talent gap, that's why they can't beat the big boys? I think it's a great coach. And you know, today, Kalani Sitake has not proven that he's a great coach. That just is true.
I don't think anybody on the staff has proven that they're great.
No, I mean, it's hard to know sometimes with the coaches a level or two down, right? They could be. You know what I mean? So I wouldn't throw everybody
out. Yeah, like this,
out.
Right, I get it. But the coordinators?
Well, the coordinators, Tuiaki has shown that he's average at best. Maybe slightly above average. I mean, his defenses have been ranked this year's struggling, but have been ranked decently before, right? Randy Whittle on Facebook says, how many losses to finish the season will truly put Sitake in the hot seat? Do you think another loss to Utah State will be more impactful than the earlier wins against USC and Tennessee for Kalani's future? I don't think the win against Tennessee helps Kalani that much. Do you?
Oh, I think in terms of his job security, I think the win against Tennessee is meaningless.
I think it's nearly meaningless. The win against USC was quite good. I mean, following it up with a loss to Toledo was not good. But I mean, USC is a pretty good team this year. I think that could very likely be the best one we get, depending on how these games against Boise State and Utah State turn out. I mean, beating Boise State would definitely be a better win, but. I don't know how many losses to finish the season. I mean he doesn't have a contract, so technically he's on the hot seat regardless, isn't he? If you don't have a contract, you're on the hot seat.
Yeah, I mean, like, it is up for debate.
It's up for debate. I mean, if he had a contract, then I think we'd be having a different discussion, because then you have to eat money, and how do you, you know, does that make sense? I honestly think if they were at, and we talked about this before, if the administration was absolutely totally buying into Sitake, they would have signed him to an extension last spring or in the fall. I think they're taking a wait-and-see approach. I know people are saying, well, they're waiting for the ESPN deal to finalize, so they got the money or whatever else. And that could be true. That could be true. But I think they're waiting. So shifting gears completely, Matt, to new starting quarterback, Jaren Hall. Justin Sweeney has this to say.
Sweeney!
That's at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter. He says, assuming Jaren Hall will tear up a pretty weak second-half strength of schedule, how long until fans are calling for him to stay starter if and when Wilson comes back? Would it be a Boise State upset that cements Mr. Hall? Hashtag tweetbag.
There's a contingency of fans that if Jaren Hall goes out there and has a decent first quarter, will be calling for Wilson to sit when he returns. There's some group of people that will say that. They're idiots, but they will say that.
Here's the thing. If BYU were to run the table, okay, and let's assume Wilson does not play again, but let's say BYU runs the table. They beat Boise and Utah State, finish the year with a win against San Diego State, and go to a bowl game. I know that's not probable, but let's just play a hypothetical here, man. Okay? If Jaren Hall plays spectacularly well, he's likely the starter game one next year. True or false?
I think I've seen this movie before.
It's true,
and
right?
And I don't know. Well, I guess he's not.
What are you talking about? If he beats Boise State and Utah State, runs off a bunch of wins, plays really well at Wilson's level or above, statistically speaking, he at minimum, it's they fight it out in spring and fall.
I'll give you that. But it also depends on how hot Satake's seat really is right now. Because if Jaren Hall comes in there and absolutely saves Satake's job, then yeah, he's the starter.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
sure.
Here's the thing. I don't think that scenario is likely to happen, even if Hall plays better than Wilson has played. I don't think that's likely because right now I haven't seen evidence that this team can put that many wins together. I'd love to be wrong, by the way. It'd be fantastic. The other part is I have no idea how good Jaren Hall actually is. And I know we've had these articles, this high school coach and people that, you know, were at quarterback camps with him, and he's the greatest. Like, I don't really buy any of that stuff because what's a high school coach and people that played with him at camp going to say? It's good that they say those things, right? It would be very disconcerting if his high school coach was saying, gosh, I never thought he'd even play high school football, right?
Which kid? He played on my team?
Ah, the baseball player. You're talking about the kid that was really good at baseball, right?
Doesn't ring a bell.
So I just don't know how good he is. I mean, we've seen him play so little that I don't have a good feel, obviously, for how good he is. And if the coaches thought he was better than Zach Wilson in the fall, they would have started Jaren Hall, most likely, right?
Yeah, but they did say all along that it was a real competition.
Yeah, but don't
so
you
if
think...
you buy if you buy that coach speak, then
yeah, I don't buy the coach speak.
Yeah, neither do I.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, okay. So the second question on Hall is Nicholas Nelson says off of Facebook. Now that we've had all week to climb out of the pit of despair, which by the way, our show last week was depressing, and this week is not starting off any better. But we're about to talk about basketball.
I've got a little more energy.
Wah, wah.
I feel much better. Yeah. But... yeah. More energetic.
So he's feeling better about our prospects as a road favorite at USF, as he should, by the way. We're going to beat Southern Florida, not Central Florida. We'll get back to that in a second when we play our game here at the end. Looking ahead, I worry about getting too conservative with Hall in the passing game. We simply don't have a dominant run game, as both O-line and the running back group have struggled mightily at times. How much of the passing playbook do you recommend Grimes use on Saturday? Matt, do they got to go aggressive in the passing game, or do you think it's better for this first game with him as starter, knowing that Boise State is only a week after that? What do you think?
I would open up the entire playbook except for the part where you line Jaren Hall up as a receiver or do something cute inside the red zone with like Austin Kefensis taking snaps. I would open up the everything else in the playbook, though, I say should be part of the game plan.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, they're going to have 2 weeks of practice. They'll know if he's not comfortable with parts of the passing game, you have to cut those out, right?
Yeah, no? Yeah. If he's not comfortable with it, I think you do have to cut it out. Sure.
You have to find, I think against Southern Florida, they're bad enough that you just have to find 10 to 12 plays that work, and then you just mix and match those plays. I think with a new quarterback, that could make a lot of sense. I would say, though, that I don't think our running game has been... I don't know what our running game has been. I mean, it was bad against Washington. I think it's just been okay every other time. And we have not committed to it, and we have not, you know, owned it. I don't know, with Critchlow being the guy behind Hall, that we probably want Hall to carry the ball 15 times. Right? Like, I think Hall's going to carry the ball probably on, say, QB-designed runs, not scrambles. I think you got a limit to 4 or 5, right? And you want him, you know, if it's not for a first, near a first down, you want him sliding. Do you disagree with any of that?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I agree with that.
But I think against Southern Florida, I think you try to run the football. And you commit more to it than what we've done in the past to protect, at some level, to protect all. I get it. We don't have Tyson Williams. It'd be much easier if we could hand him the ball 20 times. But, we'll see who else lines up at running back if we get one of those linebackers back.
Listen, I'm just going to say this. If Austin Kefensis takes a snap, I'm going to lose my mind.
Oh, stop that. It's fine if he takes a snap.
Barf.
Barf.
No, and I mean nothing against Austin Kefensis, but like, just those weird, cute, tricky packages. We can't even execute our normal offense.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, Matt, we'll get back to football here in a bit with a game to preview Southern Florida. Let's talk for just a couple of minutes about basketball. They had their media day last week. The big news, we had it last week. We didn't talk about it because we focused on the outcome of the Toledo game. But Gavin Baxter likely lost for the year with a shoulder injury. Matt, do you think, you know, it's hard to know because we don't know exactly how it went down. According to reports, it was Baxter battling a teammate for a rebound. Do you think this is a sign of maybe the over-aggressiveness of Mark Pope's approach, or do you think this is just, it's just one of those stupid, crazy things that happen in practice, not much you can do about it?
I think it's a stupid thing that happened in practice. There's not much you can think about it.
Yeah. I agree with you there. But what's the effect? I mean, we saw Baxter really start to emerge in the second half of last year, and when Pope was hired, I thought, man, Baxter, I think, is going to thrive in his system and be a massive contributor. On a scale of 1 to 10, where 1's basically no effect and 10 is you can kiss the season goodbye, any chance of a good season, where does this fit on that scale?
I feel like you might be into a 6, 6.5.
I think it's a 5 or a 6.
There's
it's
not
a big
lot of,
deal.
He's a big guy.
We don't have a lot of options there.
Don't have a lot to fill that spot. And he was really coming into it last season. And so I think this is definitely somebody you're going to miss.
Well, they're trying to get these waivers for a couple of the UVU transfers.
Right.
Which I don't think they'll get, but but right now, assuming those guys don't get a chance to play, it's shallow in the front court.
Well, you got the only two guys on the roster that are listed as taller than Gavin Baxter are both guys coming in from UVU.
Yeah, and you know, you look at Yoeli Childs is going to miss the first 9 games because the NCAA is dumb, and that first 9 games is going to could be brutal. And the problem is that's your resume for the NCAA tournament.
Yep,
big part of it, right? It's that non-conference schedule, because in the conference you're really going to have the only thing you can really do to to boost your tourney resume is to beat the two teams that are above you, which is likely to be St. Mary's and, of course, Gonzaga. So Coug Fan 82's got some innovative thinking. Okay. He says, at what point does the men's basketball team hold open tryouts on campus to fill these roster spots? Surely there are some intramural all-stars out there with some much-needed height. Hashtag tweetback. I think he's being facetious. Do you think he's being facetious or partially not facetious?
You know, it's like at Clemson when their quarterback was playing intramural basketball. Did you see that clip?
Yeah.
Somebody set a pick on him and he knocked him down. I don't know that we have anybody like that. At least I didn't notice anybody when I was playing intramurals. Maybe that's the way to go here. You got to find that height. There's a lot of tall kids on campus, you know.
Well, we there's not
we
a lot.
We all
of,
grew up playing church
lot,
ball.
There's not a lot of 6'10 guys walking around on campus. So I will say this short little story. Freshman year, our Q Hall, which doesn't even exist anymore, right?
Not a thing. Half of our listeners are like,
What is he talking about? It was in Deseret Towers, which is still a thing. Don't they call those new ones Deseret Towers? Or they call them something else?
It's like, it's not the same thing.
No, it's not the same thing. My grandparents didn't live in these new ones. So anyway, we organized a group of us, all of whom had played high school basketball, but most of us at like really small high schools, right? But we organized a team, and we messed up. The guy that signed us up for the toughest intramural division. So we show up for our first game. Nobody on our team was over 6'1". How well do you think that turned out?
This sounds like a terrible idea.
I don't remember the exact score, so I'm making this up, but it was like 87-12. Something stupid like that. We were able to move divisions and had a much better rest of the season. There are some guys on campus who could probably walk on and fill the last couple of spots, but there's not anybody that's likely to have any type of impact on the team.
And we need someone who's like 6'10 and weighs 240 pounds.
Yes, and again, don't think they're coming out. So Matt, before this Baxter injury, BYU was picked by the press that cover the West Coast Conference to come in third place behind, of course, Gonzaga and St. Mary's. Do you think that changes now?
You know, I don't know that it does. I think we're still competitive for that third place slot. I think that our tournament resume at the beginning of the season is going to suffer a little bit because of the loss of both of these guys that you mentioned. But I think you figure something out, and looking at the competition in the conference, I still think you fight for that third place slot. What you do lose is the upside of squeaking in past one of those two top teams.
Yeah, and quite frankly, if you're going to make the tournament, I don't think it's likely the West Coast Conference gets three teams in the tournament, barring something strange, like, say, BYU puts together just an okay resume, not good enough, but has a run and wins the tournament in the conference tournament, right? Then you might see three. I don't think if things play out according to script, Gonzaga wins the regular season and the conference, that you see three teams go. Again, if BYU were to like be amazing in their non-conference schedule. But Pope's going to be, you know, kind of putting some of this together with duct tape in year one. So let me ask you this from an expectation standpoint. If this season ends up not going particularly well or looks a lot like the last couple of seasons from Dave Rose, how does this affect how you're going to feel about Pope coming on as the coach? Does this change things for you? Or will it be like, it's year one, give the guy a chance to figure all this stuff out?
I think you've got to give him a year. I mean, he's not even going to have all of the tools of what he brought over. I think he's developed Toulson into a better player than what we've seen when he was here before. I think you've got to give him more than 1 year before you start to make assessments.
Well, yeah, and here's the other thing. They don't, you know, basketball, I think you can create a turnaround, a rebuild, to use Dave Broderick's word from earlier. You can do that a lot faster. Because you don't need as many players. Implementing a system and a culture, I think, is easier. But it's not instantaneous in most cases. It's just not that easy to turn things around and do it differently. All right, Matt, so we're going to finish up with game time. We're going to do another.
What do you got? Bring it on.
We're going to do another Mad Libs. But it's Mad Libs predicting the game against South Florida and Tampa this weekend.
All right.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, here we go. Mad Libs. BYU's offense will look like blank against USF. BYU's offense will look like blank against USF.
You ready?
Yes.
Fire! It's going to look like straight fire.
I don't know what that means.
Fire. Good? It's going to look like fire.
Not like a dumpster fire, but like dumpster fire. On fire.
Right. I think they're going to look good.
I think BYU's offense will look okay against South Florida. I think we'll feel like, okay, that's all right. But I think the defense is the unit that wins the day on Saturday. All right. Jaren Hall will be blank on Saturday. He will have blank passing yards and blank yards rushing, minus the sacks. So Jaren Hall will be blank on Saturday. He will have blank yards passing and blank yards rushing, minus the sacks. Matt, what do you got? Jaren Hall will be what on Saturday?
Amazing.
Jaren Hall will be good on Saturday, is what I say. He will have blank yards passing. How many yards passing?
125 plus.
No, a number. Give me a number.
127.
All right, I'm going to say 175. And how many yards rushing? Minus sacks.
106.
I'm going to say 85. 85. All right, interesting. The defense will need to be blank to stop USF.
Conscious?
They're not very good. Their offense isn't particularly good.
Present? The defense will need to be present?
I think the defense will need to be better than they were against Toledo to stop USF.
Okay.
Need to be a little better. All right. You can expect blank to be the unexpected star on Saturday for the Cougars. So who's going to be the unexpected star?
Bushman isn't unexpected, though,
no,
right?
Bushman's not unexpected. I mean, no.
So I was going to say Bushman, but that doesn't really count.
So you got to pick somebody else. That's how this works.
I'm going to go with. No, well, Mad Libs, we'd be like inserting like verbs and stuff completely blind.
That's true.
That's not really how this works either.
No, it's not. It would be fun. We should do that next time.
That actually could. That has the potential to be pretty hilarious.
Yeah. I'll give mine first.
Okay, go ahead.
I believe the unexpected star will be Talon Shumway.
Interesting. A
couple of big catches from Shumway on Saturday. All right.
I'm going to go with Gunnar Romney.
Gunnar Romney. Cool. He was the picture of our tweet bag picture this week. It was his catch against USC. Blank will kick the first field goal for the Cougars.
Oldroyd.
Southam. Blank will be the defensive star of the game. And this one is an unexpected, so you can pick whoever you want.
Tonga.
Kyrus Tonga. Good pick. I'm going to pick Diane Gunwalaku.
Yes!
And by the way, the announcers will likely not get his name correct.
What's the over-under on different pronunciations of his name we hear?
Well, I haven't heard.
I'm going to set it at 2.5. It's a 2.5. You're taking the over or the under?
It depends on the crew, but not knowing the crew, I'll take the over.
All right, there you go.
Take the over. Jeff Grimes needs to focus on blank as the offensive coordinator.
Something. Just pick something and focus on it. Like, we're all over the map.
Right? An identity. just to use your earlier word. I'm going to say an identity. And I look at all the cool, I mean, we are in this really awesome time for offensive football at the pro and college level. People are doing all sorts of really cool things. And I feel like Grimes is like dabbling in that stuff, but he hasn't really figured out what it is that he wants to take and be. And again, an identity. So, Matt, here it is. Final score will be BYU blank, USF blank.
BYU 31, USF 10.
I'm going to say BYU 28, USF 17, but it's not that close. BYU controls the whole game. All right. They're 4.5-point favorites. I think that's low. I would take BYU in that scenario.
Take BYU, kids.
If I was a gambling man, I would do that. Well, anyway, this is a shorter show than what we've had recently, but I think that's all right.
But I feel like we're going out on a high note. We're going to win this game.
We're going to win this game.
We're going to win this game on Saturday.
We're going to win this game.
Jaren Hall's he's going to look fine. They're going to be okay. This is a good opponent for this to work out. It's a road game. This is, you know, if things are going to shake out this way, this isn't a terrible place in the season for it to happen. And Jaren Hall isn't a bad quarterback. Like we've got some time here to, you know, I think we'll be okay this weekend.
I think we'll be okay this weekend, and it will give me if Hall looks and the offense look good against South Florida, I think I'm going to feel better about a potential for an upset against Utah State in Logan. I'm not going to feel great.
They got to score like 50 points if I'm going to change my mind about how I feel.
Okay,
about this
that's fair. That's fair. I don't know it'll change much about how I feel about the Boise State game, but it could change about how I feel about Utah State and San Diego State, right? And I still think we beat Liberty, Idaho State, and Massachusetts easy. I'm not worried about any of those three games. Did you see UMass score this last weekend?
No, geez.
Yeah, they're terrible. They may be the worst team in college football. So I know we lost them a couple years ago. They were a better team than, I mean, we're grading on a curve here. You're going to win those three games. What you really need to do is beat South Florida and steal one of those three remaining Mountain West, your Mountain West slate.
Other than UMass's only win against Akron, they haven't held an opponent to less than 44 points.
And I think less than 500 yards, if I remember
They're terrible. This is going to be delicious.
Yeah. I mean, it's what, I forget who, I think it was Sweeney said. I mean, Hall's going to put up some big numbers against some of these schools, right? Just by showing up. You know, and if he were to get hurt, which I'm not, I mean, Critchlow would put up big numbers against this team. And I'm not trying to bag on Critchlow. It could be a lot worse behind Hall. But, let's go on to, I think BYU wins Saturday, and it'll tell us at least a lot more about who Jaren Hall is potentially as a quarterback than we know today. Even if it's a par opponent, I think it's and I know people are gonna be like, oh my gosh, guys, they just lost to Toledo, why are you so high on them? And I will say I'm not high on them. I just think South Florida is not very good,
and Toledo is a better football team than Tennessee, who we beat a few weeks ago. So
listen,
is it painful? Do I still hate the fact that we lost to a team whose mascot is Daft Punk? Yes, I do. I hate it.
Yeah, but Toledo is a Toledo is a mediocre to better than mediocre team.
Yeah, right? Whatever. Their mascot looks like the guy that goes into the cheap remote control cars for Christmas a few years ago. I mean, it's just the thing is ridiculous.
It's true. But they're ranked 58th in the Massey ratings, okay? And South Florida is 101st.
Right.
By the way, we're 75th. We're gonna beat we can and we should beat South Florida on Saturday. After that, the next two games get really sticky.
Really sticky is one way to describe it.
Boise is probably a top 20 team, and Utah State is not that far behind them. You know, they are Utah State is a decent team. Well, I should say they are that far behind them. But
I'll tell you what, if we're going to have a shot and if Jaren's going to be the quarterback, this is the perfect way to set him up.
This is the time to set him up.
Take him on the road where things are a little bit different, and you give him a team that he should be able to beat, right?
And beat him.
Get some reps in, run the offense, get a feel for what it's going to be like, get a feel for the speed, get a feel for what the plays are going to be. You know, let Grimes kind of figure out what's going to work so that he can call something else in the red zone. You know, you got to go through that whole process.
Yeah. And do you take anything from LSU pounding Utah State? Does that make you feel any better about our chances against the Aggies?
The only thing that makes me feel better about is that some poor Utah State fan had to go into that stadium last Saturday and listen to tens of thousands of LSU fans call him Tiger Bait. That's the only thing that makes me feel good about what I saw last weekend.
Well, I'll tell you this. It makes me feel a little better. If they'd hung with LSU at all, then I'd be like, holy crap, we're hosed, right? It makes me feel a little better. Not a lot, but, you know, because LSU's a really, really good team. So, you know, not getting blown out by them isn't exactly like they didn't get blown out by Duke.
No, they got destroyed by a better LSU team than destroyed us a couple years ago.
Yeah, that's a good point. Fact. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening. We haven't talked about it much lately, but patreon.com/riseandshout if you want to support us. After the Utah State game, we'll be doing our giveaway of a BYU-related football item. And so go ahead and go there and support us, $2 or more per month. Is the basic package that you need to do to qualify for our giveaway. Otherwise, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. If you haven't done so already, subscribe on iTunes, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!